Welcome to iRun Radio. Coming up, 100 kilometers on the trail in the middle of the night.
That opportunity to be out there on your own is just an incredible feeling. And your head, your whole world kind of comes down to the area that your headlight lights up. So everything is just focused on that little bit. I periodically look up, make sure a bear isn't crossing a trail or something like that. But your world becomes incredibly simple in a night run.
Running through the Grand Canyon.
I had only been trail running for a year. It was new to me. I wanted to do something that was really big and way out of my comfort zone that terrified me, but that I believed that it was possible. So to actually see that come to pass and to sort of cross that finish line and go, I can't believe I actually did it.
And remembering the Marathon of Hope 38 years later.
To me, sometimes it feels like yesterday, especially at this time of the year as we are about to celebrate another Terry Fox run. I was lucky enough to spend 3 months in a very stinky Ford van back in 1980, and lucky enough to reflect and reminisce on the memories of what it was like to be the third member of the Marathon of Hope and to witness what I think was a miracle, watching Terry embark and run 42 kilometers every day.
On this edition of iRun Radio, Terry Fox's brother is going to join us to talk about today's Terry Fox run. We'll tell you about the upcoming Grand to Grand Ultra, an incredible race through one of the toughest and most picturesque settings in North America, and a 100K trail race through the woods at night. Let's get things started now with the editor and general manager of iRun, Ben Kaplan. Hello, Ben.
Hey there.
What's new? How you been?
Everything is great. Loving running. The weather's gotten a bit cooler, which changes things up a little bit, and it's making sort of race season more real.
Yeah.
So good times.
Yeah, I don't mind the cooler weather from a running perspective, obviously. It's nice to run when there's a bit of a bite in the air and not with a lot of humidity. You know, that's a good thing. I'm down with that.
It feels more serious to me now. In the summertime when I'm running around, I feel like I'm sort of like a kid playing on the beach or something like that. But now it gets cool and it's like, oh yeah, these races, you know, they're no longer hypothetical and all of these big goals and things. Like it gets a little bit cooler, it gets a little more real.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, there are a lot of people who will be running today in the Terry Fox Run from coast to coast in Canada. This is just such a huge annual event and does so much for cancer research, of course, and to carry on Terry Fox's legacy, something that we have tried to do our part in perpetuating. And we did a great issue about Terry Fox going back a few issues now. And there's so many great things and have been said about Terry. But this is just one more day to kind of mark the incredible accomplishment that he achieved and the movement that he inspired.
Yeah, and I love that we're both parents, and obviously the kids' schools, you know, it's great to see plastered with posters about Terry and that they know about him and what he did, and that they know our kids know that we run, and it's nice to connect the running, start them at a young age, and that the running can mean more than, just chasing PBs and Boston qualifiers, but that actually we can be agents of change like Terry so famously was.
Yeah, that's such an important point. And I think there's two things there, Ben. I think number one, the fact that kids are aware of Terry Fox, that one of the first people outside our family that my son Jack could identify when he saw a picture was Terry Fox, right? And you know, it's not always the case. You can have somebody who does something really powerful and important, and 10 years later, younger people who didn't grow up in that time are not aware of it. And that is not the case with Terry Fox. Generation after generation is keenly aware of who he is and what he did. And then I think the other thing is that impact that you talk about, that you can do something with your running or with whatever else is going on in your life, whatever other passions you have. You can use your activity as a way to change the world. And so the running can be about personal goals, but it can be about so much more than that as well.
Yeah, so many of the stories that we love to highlight is when you go, oftentimes running is a great thing from you're a victim and you're powerless to, wait a minute, I can wrest control of this and do something, be it for yourself, for your family, or for others. But running as an agent of change is something that we really stand behind.
Yeah, No question. Daryl Fox, who is Terry Fox's brother, is going to be one of our guests on the show today. Really looking forward to that. A passionate guy who has been carrying on Terry's legacy now for decades. And himself a good runner. He had a running streak going for a long time,
right,
running every single day. We've talked to him about before on the show. What's the farthest you've ever run in 1 week, and what's the farthest you've ever run on 1 day, would you say?
That's interesting. I've never gotten past. At one point, I thought I was done getting my PBs with the marathon, and I thought the next logical choice would be to do an ultra, but
yeah,
but not a Raise Ahab ultra. Raise Ahab is obviously our contributor who runs far,
yeah,
and wide.
Runs across deserts and runs for 40 straight days, 70 kilometers a day, that kind of thing.
So I wasn't up for that, but
no.
I thought, you know, if I've done 42K 20 times, I could probably do 50K, just go slower and, you know, and hit that number. But the truth is I never have. I've never tried that, and I will someday, I think. It appeals to me.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, but as my training kept going, I thought maybe I do have another PB in me, so we'll see. So the long answer, the short answer is the longest I've ever run in one go is 42.2. And the most I've ever run in a week was probably, you know, nothing crazy. I don't do Strava, and I don't really keep a detailed logbook, but I bet you I've done 110 kilometers or something in a week.
Okay, well, that's a lot. Yeah, that's a big training week for sure.
Yeah.
And so we're going to talk to a couple of runners, a couple of women, actually, who have, and look, women are really good endurance runners, and sometimes now they're winning long-distance races overall, not just the top woman, but the finisher is a woman.
Yeah.
We're going to talk to a couple of runners who are engaged in some big long-distance events, including a multi-stage event that I think is 160 kilometers over the course of 7 or 8 days, and someone else who's doing a 100K race that happens actually overnight, so you're running in the darkness through the woods. Kind of cool. So that's we're going to get to those stories as well coming up on this edition of iRun Radio. Ben, I hope your training continues to go well. We're going to see you next weekend in Ottawa for the Army Run, right?
Cannot wait. Yes, sir. That's going to be amazing. It's always it's just such a great event, and I cannot wait to get started and cannot wait to arrive.
Yeah. Well, we'll see you here next week, and we'll have some more stories to tell about the Army Run on next week's edition of iRun Radio. Thanks for your time today, Ben.
I appreciate it, sir.
Ben Kaplan, iRun's editor and general manager. Coming up, a 100K trail race through the woods and in the middle of the night. For some, they are a brother, a sister, a mother, or a father. But for all of us, they are heroes. Show your support for the men and women of the Canadian Armed Forces. Join iRun at the 11th Annual Canada Army Run. Presented by BMO, in support of Soldier On and the Support Our Troops Fund. Join us as we run, walk, and roll through the streets of Ottawa-Gatineau with our military in Canada's most inspiring race. The 2018 Canada Army Run, September 23rd. This is no ordinary race. Register at armyrun.ca. Our first guest on iRun Radio is getting ready for the Midnight Moose next weekend. It's an overnight run on the trails, including a 100K race. Christy Raz, welcome to iRun Radio.
Thanks very much for having me on.
So what is the Midnight Moose? Tell us all about it.
So Midnight Moose is a race in Gatineau Park. And, of course, Gatineau Park is an incredible kind of gem to the National Capital Region. It's got amazing trails. And Midnight Moose is a race that offers a 25K, a 50K, and a 100K. One of the things that makes it a little bit different is all those races start at 10 o'clock at night. So regardless of if you're doing a short distance or a long distance, you do get to experience night running, which is amazing.
Okay, that's why they call it the Midnight Moose and not the
noon
moose or the 11 a.m. moose, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, some of us will still be going through all those hours, but everybody gets the chance to run at night.
Yeah. So what appeals to you about this event?
Well, for me, ultra running in general, I just absolutely love. And I'm very fortunate living in the Ottawa area that I've had some access to some really great ultras. This race is put on by Three Beavers Racing. It's one of a series of races that they do in Gatineau Park. To me, I started with road running. I did several years of road running. I was a late runner. I started running at 42. I'm 49 now, but I did several years of road running. You know, I enjoyed for a little while that quest for speed. But what I started to realize once I started doing trail races and the longer trail races is what I really enjoy is the distance. I enjoy challenging myself to the long distance. Midnight Moose really pushes that challenge for me because it's 100K, which is, you know, a significant difference or distance to run. I love the location. Again, Gatineau Park is amazing. And I've discovered I love night running. Running through the night is an experience I think every runner should try at some point. So to actually have an organized race where you can go out and run, and even if you end up by yourself in the race, you know there's a sweeper. You know somebody's back there. You know there's aid stations. People are going to be checking up on you. So it's just this perfect opportunity to run through the night in the woods.
And what's it like running through the night in the woods? How would you describe it, and how are you equipped for that? Is the trail lighted? Are you, you're wearing a headlamp, obviously?
Yep, you're wearing a headlamp. You make sure you pack extra batteries so that if that dies, you're good. It is, I know some people have concerns about running at night. You know, some people worry about the bears in the park and things like that. For me personally, it is incredibly relaxing. It's quiet and it's peaceful. And I've done running through the night, I think maybe three times now. I'll take the time to stop and turn my head off. And you're in the woods and you look up and you see the stars. It's an incredible feeling of freedom. And maybe especially as a female runner, you know, we're always maybe that little bit extra cautious about where we run and when we run. That, again, that opportunity to be out there on your own is just an incredible feeling. And your whole world kind of comes down to the area that your headlight lights up. So everything is just focused on that little bit. You know, I periodically look up, make sure a bear isn't crossing a trail or something like that. But your world becomes incredibly simple in a night run. You're looking in that area that's lit up, and you're out in nature. Last year, I did do this race last year, and I distinctly remember hearing an owl in the distance, and I'd get closer and closer. So probably it was a good 20 minutes of me listening to an owl at probably 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning. How often do you get to do that?
Oh, that's amazing. You describe it so well. And what you describe there about narrowing your focus down to what you can see and only the little bit in front of you is lighted, that is, that's really interesting, because it really does sharpen your focus to just the few steps in front of you, literally a few steps at a time, right?
Yeah, and I think, you know, so much of our lives are so busy and multitasking and so many things coming at you, and there's a real simplicity. And I'm going to say all trail running is like that, and it just gets magnified at night. You know, when you're trail running, you're always focusing. We have very technical trails in this area, so you are always focusing on what your feet are doing and making sure that you're not tripping and that you're not falling. Your whole world becomes simplified. So now you put that at nighttime where you're seeing even less. And I think it's a real treat to be able to experience that, given the kind of lives that we lead right now.
Sure. Now, you've done this event before, is that right?
I did. Well, I did it last year. I had already done my first 100K last summer in August. I did the I2P 100. And so I was very excited about doing a second 100K. I've done a number of 50Ks. I had done a 50 miler last year. And I headed out to this one, you know, really hopeful. Went in a little under the weather, which didn't help. But it also happened last year to be the weekend that we ended up, I think, breaking every heat record ever for that weekend in September. So by the time the daytime rolled around, it feels like temperature was in the mid-40s. So when you've already been running all night, and of course in Gatineau Park, you're doing the elevation as well. So you're climbing and you're up and you're down and you're technical trails and everything. And in all honesty, I screwed up my hydration. You know, you get tired, you think you're taking in enough, but then you're paranoid and you think, what if I run out before the next aid station? Or so then you're trying to save it. And if you had asked me up until probably like 78 kilometers, I was sure I was going to finish that run. Not fast, but I was sure I was going to finish it. And then the dehydration set in. And so basically I got lightheaded. You know, I actually sat down on the trail three times to try to get myself ready again, and realized, I think it was about 84 kilometers, that safety-wise, my best choice was to stop. So I did not make the full 100 last year. So needless to say, this year, I kind of have a bone to pick with the race. I need to finish it.
Yeah.
So
you've got some unfinished business. But look,
exactly,
84 kilometers is still two marathons. So nothing
true.
To be ashamed of.
No, nothing to be ashamed of. But of course, like any race, when you don't cross the finish line, you know, and I 100% knew that I had made the best decision. And you have to make those decisions. That was my first ever DNF at anything. You have to make those decisions sometimes. So I, you know, I was comfortable with my decision. Certainly didn't take away from the disappointment, though.
Yeah. So 100 kilometers, most runners, even people who've done marathons, can't fathom that distance and what it's like to run that distance. So tell us what's involved in that, how you prepare for it, and what it's like when you're actually competing in a 100K event.
Sure. Well, first of all, I'm going to say I think anybody who runs can probably do 100K. And I'm saying that as a 49-year-old who didn't start running until 42. I am the poster child for back-of-the-pack runner in many trail races. If you prepare for it, I think any runner can do it. And it's just, I think part of the problem is people compare it to a marathon and how hard that is. But running a marathon and running an ultra are two very, very different things. You're not going to run the same pace. So you're not, and you're not looking for that constant, steady pace. The way I approach any trail race, and especially an ultra, is I run what the trails allow me to run. You know, I do what the trails allow me to do. In terms of training for that, again, I'm so lucky I have access to Gatineau Park, so lots and lots of trail running. Probably the biggest thing for me to prepare for a distance run is the back-to-back runs. So I'll do a Saturday long run and then a Sunday longish run, so that they're back-to-back. I more often base it on time rather than distance, because every trail is so different. So, for example, I might head out on a Saturday with a plan of doing 6 hours, and then on a Sunday with a plan of doing 4 hours. So those back-to-backs make a big difference. Making sure you're doing at least some of your running on trails makes a big difference, and getting some of that running in on technical trail so that you get used to that.
Sure.
So those are the key things. The other thing, of course, and again, like I said, I screwed it up last year, is starting to work out the calories, working out the hydration, you know, how that's going to work. And that's something I think I started dialing in on a little bit this year. I did my first stage race this year, and I knew I had to be on top of that. So, you know, every race you learn something, you know, just like road racing.
Sure.
And you can apply it to the next race of how you're going to fix it. But I do really think if somebody wants to run ultras, they can. You know, the people who say, oh, I can't imagine doing that, I said the same thing. It's something we can all do, I think, if that's what you want to do.
Now, what you said earlier I thought was interesting, because I have never run 100K, but I think what you're saying is a little bit like when you go on a long road trip in the car as compared to a shorter drive of a couple of hours. You settle in more, you plan it out better. You're probably going to take a break here and there for nutrition, for a pit stop, that kind of thing. You're kind of going into it with a different mindset. It's not let's just get from point A to point B as quickly as possible. It's let's settle in for the long haul here.
That's it, exactly. That's the perfect way to explain it. There's a whole different mental attitude towards it. For me, it was very freeing. At first, I had a hard time switching over to the trail running, because if you're coming from the road running, you're like, but I'm used to hitting this pace, and I hold that pace, and you know, and everything's about pace. And what I discovered is once you got into the trail running and the ultra running, I don't look at my watch that often. My mentality is I'm going to do what I can do. I'm going to break when I need to break. And you have all this time. Like there's an element of comfort in knowing that, okay, if I make a mistake or something goes wrong, I have time to fix that. And one of the big things, I think especially this summer, I've learned with ultra running is to sort of embrace those lows, because you have the time to get through them. So you could at kilometer 55 feel the most miserable you have ever felt. You know, if you feel like that at kilometer 37 in a marathon, that could be a problem. At kilometer 55 in an ultra, it means you got to ride it out. Ride it out, and it's absolutely incredible how your body will get through that low and pick up again. So you actually have this kind of time, like you said, like on the long drive, you've got that time to slow down. You've got that time if you make the wrong turn. Okay, well, I got time to fix that. So it is a very different mentality than trying to hit your half marathon pace or your marathon pace. Now, again, I'm speaking as somebody, you know, towards the back of the pack. I'm sure that the front runners are.
Yeah, you might have a different strategy if you're trying to win, obviously. But
exactly. Yeah.
But that's very well said, Christy. That's very powerful. And look, I respect that distance a great deal, as would any runner. I wish you the best of luck in the event. I hope it goes well for you this time, and I want to thank you for being on the show with us.
Oh, thanks very much for having me.
That's Christy Raz of Ottawa, who's doing the Midnight Moose event next weekend in Gatineau Park in Western Quebec. Coming up next, a multi-stage event in the Grand Canyon. For some, they are a brother, a sister, a mother, or a father. But for all of us, they are heroes. Show your support for the men and women of the Canadian Armed Forces. Join iRun at the 11th Annual Canada Army Run. Presented by BMO, in support of Soldier On and the Support Our Troops Fund. Join us as we run, walk, and roll through the streets of Ottawa-Gatineau with our military in Canada's most inspiring race. The 2018 Canada Army Run, September 23rd. This is no ordinary race. Register at armyrun.ca. Our next guest is getting ready for the Grand to Grand Ultra in 1 week. It's a race in the Grand Canyon, and it's not only beautiful, it is incredibly challenging. Leanne Richardson, welcome to iRun Radio.
Thanks for having me.
First of all, describe what the Grand to Grand Ultra is.
Okay. Well, the Grand to Grand Ultra is a 7-day, 6-stage race in the Grand Canyon. It covers Utah and Arizona desert. You're starting from one of the Seven Wonders of the World, the north rim of the Grand Canyon, and you finish on the summit of the Grand Staircase. You're crossing all kinds of different terrain. So you've got sand dunes, red rock slot canyons. The first day, I think it's a cacti field, variety of different types of cacti. There's riverbeds, there's risk of flash flooding, all kinds of things. So it's just a 7-day stage race in the Grand Canyon.
And how far do you end up running, and how much do you end up climbing?
A lot of climbing. So the running itself is 170 miles, so 273 kilometers over the 6 days of actual running. And the climbing, I think, is approximately just over 18,000 feet.
Wow. That's a lot.
It's a lot.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about why you wanted to do this in the first place, and then we can talk about why you wanted to do it again.
Right. Well, the first time, well, both times, actually, I have to say, it is because, as you know, I'm a big supporter of Impossible to Possible, and Grand to Grand offers a race entrance to a participant who wants to raise funds for specific charities. And so in my case, it's Impossible to Possible. We had put out, last year we had somebody else run it on behalf of I2P, and this year we had someone lined up and it didn't quite work out. So I kind of stepped in with the opportunity of, I'm always fundraising for I2P. So it was another opportunity to get out there. It's a life-changing event, truly. You meet runners from all over the world that are very like-minded. You know, these are friendships that you're going to build and last for a lifetime. The different people that are going there with different goals. So it was an opportunity that I got to go back.
All right. And what was the experience like the first time?
Amazing. I'm almost too good that I'm a little bit nervous second time around because it was so good the first time. Everything couldn't, like, it was so perfect from nutrition to, I'm not an elite. I'm certainly not making the podium. So I'm just there to finish. So I enjoyed every moment of it, even through painful days that there were, because every day you're running a minimum of marathon a day, 50K on one day, and I think it's 85 kilometers on the long stage. So there's a lot of running, so your body obviously has to adapt, but truly every aspect of it was perfect. So I'm really looking forward and hoping that I can mimic the same thing.
Yeah, and how do you prepare for that? How much training and running do you do in advance?
I've been doing about 9 months now, so you are running back-to-back runs at least 2 or 3 months before your pack training, at least, two, three, 4 or 5 months even before, where you're carrying weight on your back, because the stage race is self-supported, so you have to carry everything that you need for those 7 days. They provide tents in a rolling campsite atmosphere, and they provide cold water and hot water. Everything else, your in-race nutrition, your food at the end of the day, everything that you need, you have to carry with you. Sleeping bag, sleeping pad, all of that. Wow. So you do a lot of training where you carry your stuff with you so you can get prepared.
So how much weight are you carrying when you're running?
Last time in 2016, I had 23 pounds to start, and obviously you eat through your food, but it's surprisingly doesn't seem to ever get lighter, even though you're eating your food. This time around, I'm hoping to be between 18 and 20 pounds. I've learned a few things. I definitely, maybe some luxury items I had the first time, I won't bring a second time. So I'm hoping to keep it no more than 20 pounds.
All right. Well, good luck with that part of it. And so what was the experience like physically for you when you were running? How demanding was it?
I mean, it is physically challenging. You are hiking a good portion. I did find that we are so lucky to have Gatineau Park so close, and there are so many, like, there's no flat parts in Gatineau Park. You're always going up or you're going down, which is perfect for training. I did notice, like, for myself, I felt like a lot of power hiking was involved, but I was prepared for that, so I did well. Whereas other people who are runners, and I don't know if they thought they were going to run through it, but they suffered when they were forced to power hike because you're using different muscles. So I think power hiking for me really helped save me, that my body was ready for it. So the experience was amazing, and the terrain changes constantly, that every 10 kilometers there's something different. So even if you're starting to suffer, there's something, it's so amazing. You are running in parts of the Grand Canyon that are not open to the public. So you're seeing parts of it that you'll never get to see again if you're not part of this race. So it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it sounds incredible. Now, when you completed this event, what did that do for you? How did it change how you felt about yourself? I mean, that is a huge accomplishment. So what did it mean for you to complete this event?
That's a great question. It solidified in me that you can do anything that you set your mind to, and you hear things like that, but truly, if you want something, if you set a goal for yourself, you'll find a way to make it happen. So I think, if you're working hard, if you're training hard, and you believe that it's possible, then you can do it. And I went into that first time, I had only been trail running for a year. It was new to me. I wanted to do something that was really big and way out of my comfort zone that terrified me, but that I believed that it was possible. So to actually see that come to pass and to sort of cross that finish line and go, I can't believe I actually did it. Like, I did it. And the DNF rate, we started, I think it was 139 people started, and I believe it was 114 finished. So you're losing 5 to 7 people every night who are not completing it for one reason or another, and that is huge. So to me, it was just the sense of accomplishment that truly there's nothing that I can't do if I really work hard, and so that, and that spilled over into my kids' lives to tell them that whatever you want, chase your dreams. Like, don't settle and limit yourself based on what you think you can do, but chase your dreams, whatever you're passionate about. And I really, it kind of pushed me in that direction of helping my kids go after what they want.
I think that's very well said. And what I think is so powerful about it, whatever it is that you set out to do, when you actually do it, how it changes your outlook. It's one thing to say those things, but when you actually accomplish something you weren't sure you could do, and you do all the work to put yourself in a position to accomplish it, and then you actually do it, you feel it in such a powerful way that goes beyond words, goes beyond somebody else telling you you can do whatever you set out to do, right?
Exactly. And I think it was the hard work had to be there. I didn't skip a training session. I didn't skip. Like, I was very dedicated. I was very dedicated to the nutrition, whether I felt like eating or not. Obviously Ray Zahab was my coach, and he gave me very specific instructions on what I needed to do. And if I followed those instructions, he could help me succeed. And I was like, I'm going to do everything he says. And I did it. And I remember phoning him after and saying, like, it was just amazing because the nutrition, the recovery, all of that stuff, you need to put that back in your body so your body can start to recover overnight, and then you got to get up and do it again. So if you skip on all those, if you don't feel like eating, if you have the wrong nutrition, like, it's just such a balance of everything coming together, I think.
Yeah, and Ray has been so good at emphasizing that when he's talked about his own adventures and expeditions and all of that. It's not just about the running. It's about the preparation, right? It's so much about
absolutely.
About being in a, you know, having everything ready and knowing what you're going to do in certain circumstances and having the right food and nutrition and making sure you follow, you make a plan and you stick to the plan.
Exactly. And you trust the training. You trust it all.
Yeah. And that's, you trust the training. That's such a strong way of putting it too. Cause there are times when I've been on some long runs or running in a marathon. And I say to myself, this is what I prepared for, right? This is what I trained for. So
exactly.
It
just helps you. It's cause it does come down to when you're out there, and same with marathon, like whether it's a marathon, an ultra, whatever you're doing, when you've trained and prepared for it kind of powers your mind, because your mind has to take over, because it's going to get hard and it's going to hurt. And so when your mind is prepared to be able to say, no, like you're saying, I trained for this, or I can do this.
Yeah, very powerful stuff. So is there one thing in particular you're looking forward to about doing this event again?
I think, honestly, the people. This year there are only two females from Canada. There are five males, I think, Canadians. I think it's 138 people in total, and they come from all over the world. I've already arranged to, I'll be meeting a girl that's coming in from France. Her name's Emily, and this is her first time doing Grand to Grand, and we're sharing a room together. So it's those friendships and those relationships of people that have, everybody has their own story and their own reason as to why they're going to line up. So I think it's doing all of that, but sharing the experience with the people, I think, is the thing I'm looking forward to. New people.
Right on. Well, Leanne, I wish you the very best of luck. I look forward to hearing about it when you get back. So go out and have a great experience. And thank you for joining us on the show.
Thank you so much, Mark. Take care.
That's Leanne Richardson, who will be competing in the Grand to Grand Ultra in just 1 week. Coming up next, remembering the Marathon of Hope with Terry Fox's brother. For some, they are a brother, a sister, a mother, or a father. But for all of us, they are heroes. Show your support for the men and women of the Canadian Armed Forces. Join IRUN at the 11th Annual Canada Army Run. Presented by BMO, in support of Soldier On and the Support Our Troops Fund. Join us as we run, walk, and roll through the streets of Ottawa-Gatineau with our military in Canada's most inspiring race. The 2018 Canada Army Run, September 23rd. This is no ordinary race. Register at armyrun.ca. As Ben and I mentioned earlier, the annual Terry Fox Run is today. Good luck to all the participants, thousands of them taking part across Canada. Earlier this week, I had a chance to speak to Terry Fox's brother, Daryl Fox. Daryl, thank you for joining us.
Good morning, good day. Mark, good to chat with you again.
Yeah, great to talk to you again. And let's go back to 1980. You were there with Terry for a big chunk of the summer during the Marathon of Hope. What are the memories that come to mind in the summer for you as you relive some of those moments?
Well, they are a plenty, Mark, even though we are 38 years removed from the Marathon of Hope. It, to me, sometimes it feels like yesterday, especially at this time of the year as we are about to celebrate another Terry Fox run. I was lucky enough to spend 3 months in a very stinky Ford van back in 1980, and lucky enough to reflect and reminisce on the memories of what it was like to be the third member of the Marathon of Hope and to witness what I think was a miracle, watching Terry embark and run 42 kilometers every day during the summer of 1980. So, I don't live in history, but I like to go back there and reflect and share stories of what it was like to participate in the Marathon of Hope.
And can you describe just how tough that was for Terry? Because the Canadian Museum of History did a great exhibit on Terry a couple of years ago, and I think it really allowed people to see up close the clothes that he wore, the artificial leg that he ran on, his running shoes. And it's worth pointing out, especially for people who run today or who have runners in their lives, the shoes were a lot different then. And Terry basically wore the same pair of shoes for a huge chunk of this, just kind of resurfacing the bottom of his shoes with that that kind of glue that he used.
Shoe goo.
Shoe goo,
it.
Yeah.
It was shoe goo, yes. Yeah. And it still exists, so, actually, that product.
Yeah, wow. You know, so it wasn't the modern shoe with the cushioning, and
no.
It wasn't even a modern prosthetic leg.
No, it looks like you look at the shoes back then, Mark, and they were like slippers, really. You had no support, nothing in the soles, and that's why we used the shoe goo to try and make them last more than 2 weeks. That's basically how quickly Terry went through his left shoe, which was his good leg. Every 2 weeks we would have to change it, even with the added shoe goo. Yeah, light, night and day differences in terms of technology and what Terry would run on today, not only his shoe, but his artificial leg as well. The leg that Terry ran on was a walking leg, prehistoric by today's standards. If he had today's technology, he would run just like you and I, Mark. So he would have covered more ground than he did in 1980, and it would have been a lot more comfortable and less painful for him to run if he were running today. You mentioned also the exhibit from 3 years ago, actually, as we celebrate the 35th anniversary. That exhibit, the Terry Fox exhibit, was so popular that it continues to tour, and right now it's in Edmonton at TELUS World of Science, and heading to BC in an exploration place in Prince George next month as well. So lots of ongoing work when you live in the legacy of Terry Fox.
Yeah. And I'm just thinking, it never occurred to me before, but if Terry's artificial leg had been more modern, like the kind that that runners use today, runners who have lost a leg, then we might never have seen that shuffle that was so specific to the Terry Fox run, right, to the Marathon of Hope, that kind of skipping motion that he made to take two steps with his human leg for every step he took with his artificial leg.
Very good point. And, it's interesting because that gait and the sound of that gait is what greets you when you enter the Terry Fox exhibit. And it's ingrained in my mind, in my memory, that extra hop that Terry had to take on his good leg to allow his artificial leg to swing through. It wouldn't be the case if he was on today's technology.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Terry Fox run coming up this Sunday. And
is it this Sunday?
Yeah. I'm
always
sure.
The last to know. Thanks, Mark.
Yeah. You should probably go to one of those sometime.
Yeah.
You should check it out. It's a good thing.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. So what has that come to mean? And one of the things, we were talking about this before, but, it's so powerful to me how many young people embrace this event and the story of Terry Fox, because that's not a guarantee. When time passes, sometimes a story fades, and this one has not.
Yes, and that's, I think, a very important reason why we are still, we're still out there, and, the story still resonates, is because the story has been passed on to the next generation. And not only has it been passed on, but it's been embraced, to recognize that there'll be over 8,000, I think closer to 8,500 schools across the country that will host their own Terry Fox run or event this year is really incredible. So teachers, educators recognize not only the need to raise money for cancer research, but what this story offers to their children and their students. And that's, what all of us as family members enjoy so much, is that opportunity to attend many of those schools and see many of those events and see the children and how excited they are to hear about Terry. To them, they know that Terry is no longer with us, but to them, it's not 38 years. It could have been last week, last month. That is really something that would make Terry very proud to know that the baton's been passed on to them, and they will be the future organizers and researchers going forward.
Yeah, and that speaks to the incredible work that has been funded by the Terry Fox Foundation over so many years. And it's really powerful to see, for example, as I have seen at the event here in Ottawa, people who had the same cancer as Terry did, who have been effectively cured of that cancer because in part the research that's been done and funded by the Terry Fox Foundation, by all the money that's been raised at the Terry Fox Run and at other events throughout the year.
Yes, and you know, you mentioned Ottawa, and I know someone personally in Ottawa, first name Todd, who had the same form of cancer that Terry had, osteosarcoma, and is alive today. And you know, I can't change how history has changed the impact cancer has had on my life, but to know that Todd is still around because of the investment we've made makes all the difference in the world.
And what does it mean to you and members of your family when you go to a Terry Fox Run and you see people running and wearing T-shirts with Terry's image on them and raising money and just carrying on this incredible legacy that he started with that initial goal of wanting a dollar for every Canadian, which at the time would have been in the range of $20 million, and knowing that it's many, many multiples of that?
Well, it's every day is a proud day to be able to see the legacy. I think I appreciate it more now that I'm a little bit more dated. I can appreciate and understand that things over time tend to fade away, and this is something that hasn't. And so I'm more thankful for that Canadians remember Terry and are carrying the torch and have picked up that baton. That's something that I recognize, and more so than, I mean, it's not that I didn't appreciate it 20 years ago, but I have, again, with age and maybe a little bit more wisdom, I'm more thankful and understanding of just how Canadians have picked up where Terry left off in Thunder Bay, and I know how much that would mean to him, so that's why it really means so much to us as family members to be able to witness that legacy continue to grow 38 years later.
Yeah, and one of the things that I think is incredible is just how much other fundraising and other purpose-oriented running it has inspired, right? It's not just, I mean, obviously, There is the huge amount of money that's been raised for the Terry Fox Foundation, but just the idea within Canada of, you know, I'm gonna run and I'm gonna raise money for something that's important to me. A lot of that was inspired by Terry Fox.
Yes, I'm not exaggerating when I say that it's a week doesn't go by when we don't receive word of someone who is planning a venture or an activity, and they were inspired by Terry. You know, they might have chosen a different cause, and that's wonderful and great. It's about finding out what your purpose in life is and devoting time and energy to that. So that's also an amazing component of how Terry has passed that to others so many years later.
Terry's birthday was July the 28th, and he would be 60 this year. I think for a lot of Canadians, he has such a youthful image. They think of him from the summer of 1980. It's almost hard to picture him as a 60-year-old, isn't it?
It is, and I don't have that vision. You know, I still see him as, you know, 22 years old, running the Marathon of Hope. And what's interesting about Terry's image is that it's never dated. His appearance, with the exception of the short shorts, we can't get around that. The short shorts were part of the time, and I'm embarrassed whenever there's photos of moi beside Terry wearing them as well. But they do come up from time to time. But otherwise, his appearance, his curly hair, I mean, it would fit today.
Sure.
And that's what's interesting about Terry's image and likeness. But it is. I don't think about, I mean, it's quite hard to imagine Terry as a 60-year-old and what he would be up to now and how he would perceive things at this time. But that is the reality. Yes, it would have been Terry's 60th birthday in July.
Well, Daryl, it's great to talk to you again, and I wish you continued success as you and your family continue to carry forward Terry's legacy along with millions of Canadians who support you. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you, Mark. All the best. Take care.
That's Daryl Fox from the Terry Fox Foundation. Coming up on next week's show, we're going to talk to a military veteran who's participating in the Army Run. I hope you can join us then. Thank you for being with us this week. Have a great week.